Welcome to Out of Breath, where you'll embark on a no-holds-barred journey through the gritty realities of sleep apnea and sleep dentistry. Award-winning, board-certified otolaryngologist Dr. Madan Kandula and best-selling author Jason Tierney pull no punches as they dissect the industry's flaws and triumphs, providing you with an unvarnished look at the dynamic and ever-evolving world of better sleep.
What are we doing here?
On Earth? In this room.
In this room.
In Milwaukee. What are we doing here? I think we are bringing forward some sacred cows and slaughtering them. Do you like slaughtering steak? I know you, again, you don't eat the meat, but you are willing to say, are you a sacred cow slaughterer?
I'd say so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
So it's a challenging place to live.
It's a freeing place to live because those sacred cows, they will knock you over.
When did you stop caring about the sacred cows running you over?
I think it's when I started caring about when the sacred cow. You know, I think it's when did I start noticing that the sacred cow elephants in the room at all times were just sort of like nobody. I don't know when it was. I think it's probably again part of how I'm wired is. I sit and I process and my mind doesn't allow me to tolerate sort of sacred cows, hypocrisy. It's another, to me, it's not quite the same thing, but it's similar.
But you've shared previously that you walked the straight and narrow for many years and you were part of the flock. You were one of the sheep.
Yeah.
Something changed where you became a black sheep. What happened?
Yeah, and I guess I was a black sheep marching or in flock with my brothers and sisters, and I think I became aware that I was a black sheep, and what am I doing with this flock? I think for me, as it relates to kind of the subject that we're talking about, it really comes back to me recognizing that the patients that I was treating were being harmed prior to coming to me. Having my eyes open to that fact. The healthcare system that sort of bred me. I don't know how you say. I was brought up in this system, and I believed in this system, and I was sort of a bit of a company man. Like it was one of those. As a specific side story, my parents were physicians. My dad was a surgeon. As a kid, I'd go into the hospital with him. I'd wait in the doctor's lounge. He'd go around on his patients. So from my earliest memories were hospitals, caring for patients. That system was like born and bred, basically. I was literally born in a hospital that I lived in next to when my parents were doing the residency. But so it was who I was, but what I started to see was that the system is either became or was just fundamentally broken, and it was hurting the patients I was treating, and it was allowing those sacred cows to kind of run amok.
When you say hurting, give me an example. What do you mean more specifically?
I'd say specifically for the patients that I saw and we see that have sleep apnea in particular, those individuals were more often than not injured before they got to me, meaning they had an issue, they couldn't breathe. They tried to get help, and instead of help, they got used and abused by the system, meaning that people didn't explain to them what was going on. They were dismissed. They were given treatments that the providers who were giving those treatments knew was going to be ineffective. And then those same people who would go back to say, this isn't working.
Tell me more about that. They knew it was going to be ineffective. What does that mean?
I simply CPAP, the actual real world efficacy of CPAP is various numbers go around. And I mean, what I always quote is 2/3 of folks who are put on CPAP fail. And I think that's generous, meaning 1/3 succeed, meaning when you put somebody into a treatment that 2/3 of the time is going to fail, I owe you the service of letting you know that. I think it is beyond, I'm not neutral on the fact when there's a provider doing that to somebody and they're not fully transparent. and that same person comes back to you, they happen to be in the two-thirds, they come back to you and they say it's not working, I think it's evil and vile for a provider to simply say, well, try harder. You're not, there's something wrong with you. So to me, that is the fundamental evil, is somebody has an issue that's going on, and instead of helping them, you're actually hurting them. And that happens every hour of every day, of every week in this country, still to this day. So I just got tired of it. I got fed up. And I also got fed up with the fact that, you know, really what we're talking about, people talk about sort of, people lump sleep apnea, obstructive sleep apnea, into the bucket with sleep and insomnia, and it's so complicated and so forth and so on. And it is not. It is not that complicated. It is very, very simple. Obstructive sleep apnea is a throat issue 100% of the time. Almost always the nose is impacted. If you cannot effectively treat those areas, you shouldn't be treating patients who have those issues, or you need resources to help you. So it's not that hard. It's not that complicated. I think maybe that's what I saw too, as I saw that I, in my hands, had the tools that were necessary to treat people. And I no longer was willing to sort of bite my tongue and sit on those hands. I was decided enough is enough. We've got to do something.
So what are the tools that you're referring to specifically?
Basically, you know, we call it the breathing triangle, is in order for somebody to breathe properly, whether they're awake or they're trying to sleep at night, you've got to have a nose that's open and a throat that's open. And so the tools I'm talking about are simple office procedures to get noses open, simple office procedures to get throats open. And then if necessary, devices to keep those throats open. It could be either a nasal CPAP, never a full face mask CPAP, or an oral appliance. And I believe oral appliance therapy is the best treatment for the throat component of sleep apnea. But I also believe that whatever appliance you pick, if you don't match it up with the nose, it's working properly, you're going to fail those patients often, maybe not more often than not, because I think the compliance rates with oral appliance therapy are higher than CPAP,
sure.
But they're not as high as they should be, because the majority of patients who are getting put into oral appliance therapy do not have the start of the airway working properly.
The nasal component hasn't been addressed.
Exactly, right. Exactly.
So what would you say to a dentist that's currently using oral appliance therapy with their patients that maybe isn't addressing the nasal issues?
I think having awareness that factor is just being, you're just completely ignoring that factor. And I don't know what else, I would have them do, just to be clear. So, I mean, I think if you're, so to kind of walk the walk here, is the start of the airway is the nose. In order to give somebody the best chance for success, the nose has to be working properly. If your focus is in the throat, which is where an oral appliance is actually treating, or what it's treating, or in CPAP, just understand that you're downstream from the actual start of the issue, and understand that that's inherently problematic.
Oftentimes, not every time.
You're always downstream from the start of the airway.
But the issue isn't, you're not necessarily, when you're delivering a device, you're not necessarily downstream from the problem. I mean, nasal patency may be a non-issue with some patients.
More often than not, it is an issue. It's just not recognized, because if you can't do anything about it, or you can't test for it, you're just going to sort of ignore it. And when I'm saying that, I'd say there's things that you can be done to sort of kind of say, I think this person can breathe properly. But the reality is those are, they're fool's gold. They fool you into believing. There's a belief that somebody wants to have, which is, I have this appliance that's going to work for somebody's throat. Man, I hope their nose is working properly. Mm-hmm. And it's basically almost sort of leading the witness to say, yeah, it's probably fine. So
I look at this and I say, you know, you've got the nasal patency hammer. Mm-hmm. So everything's, you know, everything's a nail.
I mean,
tell me I'm wrong.
No, I think
where's data to support that position?
I guess very, very simply, I mean, I'll go kind of, deep, potentially, but do you have your wisdom teeth?
No,
I don't have my wisdom teeth. Did you think your great, great grandparents had their wisdom teeth? I'll say they probably did. I didn't know them, I don't think, but they're probably good people. But they had jaws that were bigger than ours are, sure. And therefore they had airways that are bigger than ours are. And we focus on, you know, the mandible and maxilla, but we forget the fact that the upstairs neighbor is impacted as well. So if you have a house where the first floor has been reduced in size by 75%, the second floor is either, how do you say this, cannot exist in its normal, you know, size. And so this is, it's one of those, it's, if you follow the ball, if you believe that, I'm sure there are people who don't believe that fact, I say, my opinion, I think it's a fact, is that as a species, our airways are shrinking, and that starts, the nose is a component of that. Part of the shrinkage has to do with the fact that when we're children, we are mouth breathing. Why would you mouth breathe if you could breathe through your nose? And you could say it's sort of societal, it's cultural, it's so forth and so on. But those things kind of get intertwined. So yeah, I come with a firm conviction and firm belief that more often than not, people have issues in their airway. They just don't know that we have not yet understood how common this is, because there haven't until now been simple ways to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, a lot of people talk about mouth taping and, you know, let's, I'm going to force you to breathe through your nose. And isn't that good? And I'd say, well, it's good if the passageways are clear. It's kind of cruel if they're not. Sure. And I'd say more often than not, it's cruel, you know, meaning that you could mouth breathing is bad. Nose breathing is good. That's how we were built. But if you don't have the proper passageways, you can't do it properly. And again, I think people, kind of back to what I was talking about before, unfortunately, people have been the victim of this ignorance, meaning that there isn't a respect for the airway, period. And there's a lack of knowledge and understanding, and there's a lack of ability to do anything. And so normal people walking around are living diminished lives because they don't have the proper ability to breathe. And they don't know how bad it is for themselves. I don't mean this, it's not a mean-spirited way to say it, but our patients, the patients we see at Advent, I consider them to be unreliable narrators, meaning they're narrating the story to the best of their ability. But if you follow the line of thought there, if I ask a patient, hey, you know, are you able to breathe through your nose? Yes. And you take that at face value and say, okay, but sure. When I look and we evaluate and we say, hey, you know, okay, when you sleep at night, does your mouth drop open? Yeah, it does. You know, that's not really the way it's supposed to be. You know, just sort of being able to ask. I think to me, maybe the simple difference is my mindset and our mindset is understanding that the patients that we treat don't know what life is supposed to be like, because maybe it's probably never been that way.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it happens. Dentists can relate to this, not just through sleep, but with bruxism, for example. You mm-hmm. ask a patient, do you grind your teeth? And you can see all these worn down cusps, right. Fractured teeth. And the patient says, no.
Correct.
Well, there's physical evidence, objective evidence to support that you grind your teeth.
Right. And then, and I would assume, you know, then, you know, in that situation, you'd follow up with, hey, we're seeing some damage that looks like you're grinding your teeth, and
I
you
would
follow
hope so,
up,
yes.
You know, that I would expect it. So, I mean, again, I don't have anything, you know, clinical medicine is hard. So when I guess what I want to be clear about is I'm not throwing any stones at anybody. I mean, I think I do the best of my ability as a clinician, as do my providers. We're not perfect, but I think when I can't see, I can't help. And in my field, what does that mean? If I can't see, if I can't look into the nose, if I can't look in with a camera, if I can't look in with images, I can't help you. And it isn't helping you when if I take my blindness and I put it onto you and say, well, I hope there's nothing going on there. That's not really helpful. And so I think in this day and age, there is no excuse for somebody to go through an airway treatment without having the start of the airway evaluated. And if you can't look in the nose and you can't look in the sinuses, you can't evaluate the nose and sinuses.
So for the dentist that's following the American Dental Association guidelines, the American Academy of Dental Sleep Medicine guidelines, and evaluating their patient's oral cavity for signs mm-hmm. of sleep apnea, enlarged tongues, mm-hmm. Low high malpighting scores, whatever it might be.
Sure.
What are they supposed to do? Because that dentist typically would probably treat with an oral appliance when they deem appropriate. What are they supposed to do about suspicion of nasal patency issues?
This is where I mean,
what do they do?
I acknowledge or be aware of the fact.
Send them to Milwaukee?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess I'd say, like I said it last time, I'll say it again. I'm going to try my best to get, you know, out and get our clinics out everywhere where people need them.
Okay.
And yeah, I mean,
today, what are they going to do?
Today
what do you advise they do?
I think being aware that you are, I think to me, the simple recipe is being aware that you're starting downstream, being aware that there's probably half of the battle that you're simply just not able to see or deal with. And, you know, marching in a forward direction, which is, I think in that situation, if you are blind to what's happening in the nose and the sinuses, and you can't really do anything about it, and your only tool back to that, you know, the hammer and the nail, and you've got an appliance, well, I think it's okay to go ahead and treat, but be aware that might come with some limitations. And so, yeah, I guess I don't have a solution when the resource that's necessary to evaluate and treat the, you know, the upstream issue doesn't exist. But I can simplify, but I don't, but, and I, again, I just, I think maybe it sounds sort of, I don't know, whatever you want to describe that as. I mean, I'm describing a problem, but I'm not giving you a solution, basically. And I'd say, I'm describing a problem. I myself have created a system to provide the solution that's necessary, but I can't change the world. I can be the change that I want to see. Mm-hmm. And the change that I want to see is I want respect for the airway. I want understanding that the airway does start with the nose. I want understanding that these issues are more common than not. More people have these issues than don't have these issues. And I guess that's what I want. And again, I can't make most of that happen. I can't make things happen that are outside of my control, but for what's in my control, I can do my best. And for those who have limitations around what they're able to do in their control, I'd say just being aware of it and acknowledging it. So I don't know. I mean, that sounds, as I'm describing that, as it comes out of my mouth, it sounds problematic, but I don't have a solution for things that I don't have control over. Does it make sense? I don't know what to say other than, yeah, that's a problem.
But you don't have to solve the issue for them.
Yeah.
But just some guidance, some advice. If I'm a dentist, mm-hmm. which I'm not.
Okay.
But if I'm a dentist, let's pretend.
Yeah.
And I say, great, that all makes sense clinically. And I want to do the best for my patients.
Sure.
I'm in Wyoming.
Yeah.
What should I do?
I got nothing.
Don't tell me to move out of Wyoming.
Wyoming's great.
But what should I do?
I guess, well, one thing I would tell you to not do is don't throw a rock at me, number one. Meaning that I think that, but I'll answer your question before I kind of go in that tangent. But I'd say do the best that you can do. Understand that you have limitations there. Try to build bridges with the ENT colleagues that are likely in your communities. But understand that bridge is likely not going to be extended from the ENT to you, frankly. And so, again, what am I? I'd say just understand. I guess maybe say this. And I don't know. Is there a disagreement that the sort of this breathing triangle concept is something I've come up with as a construct? But inherently, I'd say there's nothing. I don't think there's anything inherently controversial with it.
No.
And it's a simple way to think about it. But I think part and parcel with that is accepting the fact that the nose and the sinuses are the start of the airway and an important important component of airway health in general. And so I think if we can simply have agreement on that fact, and then if we're a dentist in Wyoming that has, let's just say there's just not an ENT around, but they have an oral appliance therapy practice, their dental sleep medicine practitioner, trying to work downstream, if that's the only place you can work, go for it, is my advice. But understand that there are going to be patients that aren't going to be maximally helped because the upstream issue is not being taken care of. So I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's just understand the playing field and do what you can do. I don't know. And then I guess that's all I'd say. I mean, which sounds, again, I had the same problem when people ask me who live across the country, gosh, I've heard you guys do this office-based stuff. You guys get noses open and sinus open. I live in San Jose, California. What should I do? I don't know. You know, I guess I don't know anybody in San Jose, California, and Advent doesn't have a location there for a person walking around in a place. Again, it sounds self-serving, but it's just true. In a place where there isn't access to office-based treatments, you're kind of out of luck.
So that brings up, I think we might've talked about this in the past, but there's an awareness issue or a lack of awareness issue. Mm-hmm. And if you had this three concentric circle, this Venn diagram, you'd have physicians, and I'm using that term broadly.
Sure.
dentists and the public.
Sure.
Physicians don't know about the various treatment options. Oftentimes sleep isn't even on their radar, mm-hmm. right? Dentists, the same can be said. And even if a dentist is hyper-focused on oral appliance therapy, they're hyper-focused on oral appliance therapy.
Sure.
And then the public, Joe Blow, Jill Mill, that doesn't know mm-hmm. that whatever issues, their high blood pressure, whatever it might be, that being, you know, daytime sleepiness, that these are associated with, potentially associated with sleep apnea.
Sure.
And that there is a treatment, or that these are associated with sleep apnea, number one. Number two, that there are treatment options available other than CPAP.
Right.
Or now Inspire, because yep. Inspire, of course, has dumped a ton of money into mm-hmm. marketing. So everyone knows about Inspire.
Correct.
Until they find out that what it entails.
What it exactly. Yeah. Until that's correct. Yeah.
So at the center, that overlap is the lack of awareness.
Sure.
I mean, what's the answer there?
To me, the answer is simplifying the message. Because the message is really unclear. Physicians and dentists have done a horrible job of communicating to the public. And part of the reason they've done a horrible job is because the system is fundamentally broken. Meaning if you look at the physician camp or the dental camp, you're coming at patients, or the Inspire camp, I mean, that's at the physician camp, but if you're coming at a patient with one treatment option, and that's the only thing that you can do, and that's the only thing that you can offer, you're going to fail those patients. Mm-hmm. And you have a motivation to narrowcast your messaging. So I think, in my opinion, what is necessary and helpful is to simplify the message. I personally believe the best way to simplify the message is to extract the airway part of the message out from the rest of the sleep part of the message. It's really, what ends up happening is people start talking about sleep and they start talking about all these different things. And in my opinion, the best way to come after sleep is the ABCs, which is airway. And so I talked about it before, but there's a massive tendency in a dental sleep conference or a medical sleep conference to put all these things together, and let's just talk about them all. It's like let's do patient cases. We'll talk about this patient who's got, you know, mixed obstructive central, you know, or the obstructive central and insomnia and so forth and so on. And they're on this Medicaid, like, okay, cool. Great. Is their airway open? And the start of the airway is the nose. In my opinion, and again, I need to do a better job of this, is that breathing triangle concept, the concept of the airway, which is what it's interchangeable in my opinion. That's the first step, is just creating awareness that airway issues are running rampant, and they are what most people are describing when they describe sleep issues, and break it down. Again, I think the dagger.
So you're saying these are airway issues that are exacerbated during sleep.
Yeah, but they're a particular type of the airway is the most important issue as it relates to sleep. It's the first step. It's like the ABCs when EMS is coming in. It starts with A, and if you don't have A, nothing else really matters. And it's true on the sleep front too, but people get sort of confused, and a lot of people do have multiple issues going on. But so if you do have insomnia and central sleep apnea and obstructive sleep apnea and so forth and so on, geez, that's very complicated. No, it's not. How can it not be? Let's get the airway open. And once we have the airway open, let's see where those other issues are, and then we'll go from there. It is not good medicine to mix everything together, to confuse somebody, to not keep it simple. And the challenge, though, and again, I know it, I don't know, however it comes off, but the challenge is, if you cannot offer effective evaluation and treatment for the breathing triangle, you can't, you're motivated to broaden the conversation to make it sound like it's very complicated, because it's to your benefit. The complication benefits the rest of the sort of the sleep community, which is a very whatever chippy thing to say, but I'd say tell me an alternative reality to that one.
Why would someone do that? Why would someone want to complicate it? I mean, is it self-serving? Does it make me feel self-important? Can I bill additional codes? What's the incentive there?
I think it is self-serving. I mean, pretty much, I think most of what most human beings do is self-serving to some extent, but it's almost like it's the only thing it's a pacifier. It's complicated. Mm-hmm. It's hard. It's hard. I don't know that there's a monetary gain there. I think it's just acceptance of, somebody's position in the world. I mean, I guess in this construct, the breathing triangle construct, I am thankful I'm not sitting at the bottom of that triangle, because if I were, I too would have to create some sort of an illusion. But being able to treat at the start of the airway allows me not to kind of, my eyes don't have to be blinded and covered up. My eyes are wide open. And that puts me and my providers in a position to be maximally beneficial to our patients. And the other thing it allows me to do is to speak extraordinarily clearly about these issues. So I think, to me, you ask a question about why would people sort of be so wishy-washy and, complicated about it? I think if you don't have a solution for something, saying it's complicated makes you feel pretty good, makes your patients feel like, oh yeah, it's complicated. If you have an understanding and a solution, and if I say something's not complicated, it's actually very simple, it raises the bar for me. Because I want that bar high. So if you're a patient of ours, I want you to come in with awareness and knowledge, and I want you to expect excellence, and I want you to expect results. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want. I want you to hold me accountable to the bar that I set out for you. If I have a low bar practice, I'm going to be kind of wishy-washy about it. I'll talk about this, that, and the other thing. It'll be kind of smoke and mirrors, and maybe we'll get you treated properly. Maybe we won't. But it was hard. It was hard to begin with. So it's okay, right? It's okay that 2/3 of the time we fail you, right? Because it's hard. No, it's not okay. And it's not right. And it's not necessary.
Mm-hmm. What kind of complications can arise from these treatments?
Which treatments?
From the in-office nasal breathing treatment first, and then oral appliance therapy second.
Yeah, I mean, on the nasal breathing treatments, the most common complication would be getting a nosebleed stirred up during a recovery process, 1 in 1,000.
And
temporary.
During the recovery process, hours later, weeks later?
Weeks, okay. Days to weeks. So it's annoying. It's like, it's not a fun thing. It's very rare. It's self-limited, not a big deal. I think it's not really a complication. I would say the most common negative repercussion is we just don't make as much big of a difference as we're hoping for. How often does that happen? I'd say maybe 1 in 100 times.
Do you perform a second treatment then? Or?
It depends on what's going on. Okay. So our focus is office-based treatments. So it's really kind of a step approach. So if you come in to see us as a patient, we're going to try to get your anatomy open and avoid taking you to surgery. If we do the office treatments and it's just, haven't gotten you over the goal line, then we'll go up the ladder to surgery. That's a very rare necessity. So, not 100% of our patients we're able to get where they need to be with the office-based treatments, but very, very close to that percentage. So it's high, and we track our outcomes and our outcomes are best in class. So our outcomes from office procedures are better than reported published outcomes for surgical procedures. So, which to me is telling.
It's very impressive, yeah.
But basically, any intervention, there's a possibility of not not working or actually making somebody worse. On the oral appliance therapy side of the equation, same deal. As far as the complication rates there, I mean, what complications can occur, all mm-hmm. the complications that have been described as far as, pulling out crowns, changing somebody's bite, open bite, TMJ, you name it,
but
lots of stuff.
But no nosebleeds.
You would have to try hard, okay. It might have happened.
So those are the potential side effects.
Sure.
About how often do they occur?
Not often. I'm not an integral part of a oral appliance therapy program. I'd say single digits.
Okay. And then what do you do in those situations?
Either get somebody out of that appliance. It depends on how problem, to me, I guess clinically it is understanding what's going on, understanding is the problem worse than the treatment, Does that make sense? Is the treatment worse than the problem?
Than the problem, yes.
And if the problem is, hey, I've got my teeth have shifted a little bit, but man, I'm happy. I'm not snoring. I don't have sleep apnea. Great. Let's keep an eye on that. Mm-hmm. Go from there. If it's this is really bothersome. Let's get you out of that appliance. Mm-hmm. Let's get you into a CPAP machine, go from there. Mm-hmm. So discontinuing therapy, is a very reasonable thing. And it's again, just to be clear, and that's a very easy thing for us to do. This is very difficult. If you're a dental sleep medicine practitioner, mm-hmm. more difficult. You're really that horse that you're riding. You've got to keep riding that horse. For me, in my opinion, for my clinicians, in our opinions, is when we are proposing treatment to a patient or thinking about treatment, it's pros and cons, and we try, and if it succeeds, wonderful, and if it doesn't, we shift. Mm-hmm. And I think there's no honor lost in that, honestly. So if we put a patient in oral appliance therapy, we think it's going to be a likely success, but it isn't a success, and in fact, it's causing trouble for somebody. Let's get them out of that treatment. Let's get them into nasal CPAP, and then we'll go from there. So if I knew it was going to cause trouble, I would just go to nasal CPAP right away. And there are some people will try an oral appliance, will try nasal CPAP, still not working. That is the theoretical, mystical, magical Inspire patient. We don't see many of those people in our clinics, mm-hmm. because when you provide people with simple solutions, start with the nose, get throats open with oral appliances or nasal CPAP, the number of people who actually need Inspire, they go away. They disappear. They don't exist. It's a whole separate topic, but it's an interesting topic because I think, Inspire's done a great job with their marketing and advertising. Sure. Kudos. They have raised awareness. Kudos. They've ruffled the feathers of some communities. Kudos. But at the end of the day, the people that they're trying to reach are people. Here's a bold statement. Every single patient that is going to into Inspire therapy would be absolutely much better served by having a nose that's open with office-based treatments and oral appliance therapy. And in my opinion, somebody should need to fail those things before they have an implant placed into their body for the rest of their life. It's ridiculous. Again, I don't have anything against Inspire. I just think when you come down to the actual number of candidates who should be going into that treatment, it isn't into the thousands. It's probably it's very rare. Mm-hmm. Now I think it's good that they exist. And I think Inspire is sort of a 1.0 treatment option. I believe that there will be a future where less invasive pacing devices, let's just call them that, will be ready for prime time, mm-hmm. but it's not right now.
Like some kind of consumable or something?
Office-based office-based Inspire. I mean, just to be long and the short of it. So mm-hmm. doing something office-based, we have easy access to the back of the tongue. There's things that are getting worked on right now. I feel like it sounds like I bash everything as I talk about it, but
that's probably a good place for us to stop before we go down any more dark roads, dark alleys.
Dark alleys. We'll stay out of them.
Yeah, stay out of dark alleys.
Indeed.
Next week on Out of Breath.
When you ask them if they read, or you find out that they don't read books, mm-hmm. how do you feel about that? Does anything change?
I think I feel a little bit of sadness.